Chapter 75. The sun had set and was replaced by a quarter moon. The evening air was crisp and sharp. From his vantage point, high above the old quarry entrance, Shaw could see the lights of villages and farms miles away. It was a fair and picturesque land, he thought idly. The sound of a piston-engined plane intruded on the silent countryside. Shaw twisted around and looked skyward, but could see nothing. The plane was flying without navigation lights. He judged by the sound of the engines that it was circling at only a few hundred feet above the hill. Here and there the light of a star was blotted by what Shaw knew were parachutes. 15 minutes later, two shadows moved out of the trees below and climbed toward him. One of the men was Burton Angus. The other was stockily built. In the darkness he could have passed for a huge rolling rock. His name was Eric Caldwyler, and he was former superintendent of a coal mine in Wales. "How did it go?" Shaw asked. "A perfect jump, I'd say," Burton Angus replied. "They practically landed on top of my signal beam. The officer in command is a Lieutenant Macklin." Shaw ignored one of the cardinal rules of undercover night operations and lit a cigarette. The Americans would know of their presence soon enough, he reasoned. "Did you find the quarry entrance?"
"You can forget about it," said Caldwyler. "Half the hillside slipped away."
"It's buried?"
"Aye, deeper than a Scotsman's whiskey cellar. The overburden is thicker than I care to think about."
Shaw said, "Any chance of digging through?" Caldwyler shook his head.
"Even if we had a giant dragline, you're talking 2 or 3 days."
"No good. The Americans could show up at any time."
"Might gain entry through the portals," said Caldwyler, stoking up a curved briar pipe, "providing we can find them in the dark."
Shaw looked at him. "What portals?"
"Any heavily worked commercial mine requires 2 additional openings, an escapeway in case the main entrance is damaged, and an air ventilation shaft."
"Where do we start searching?" Shaw asked anxiously. Caldwyler was not to be rushed.
"Well, let's see. I judge this to be a drift mine, a tunnel in the side of the hill where the outcropping broke the surface. From there, the shaft probably followed the limestone bed on a downward slope. That would put the escapeway somewhere around the base of the hill. The ventilator? Higher up, facing the north."
"Why north?"
"Prevailing winds. Just the ticket for cross-ventilation in the days before circulating fans."
"The air vent it is, then," said Shaw. "It would be better hidden in the hillside woods and less exposed than the escape portal below."
"Not another safari up the mountain," Burton Angus complained.
"Do you good," said Shaw, smiling. "Work off the fancy buffets of those embassy row parties." He mashed out the cigarette with his heel. "I'll go and round up our helpers." Shaw turned and made his way into a heavy thicket near the base of the hill, about 30 meters from the old rail spur. He tripped over a root at the edge of a ravine and fell, arms outstretched for the slamming impact. Instead, he rolled down a weed-blanketed slope and landed on his back in a bed of gravel. He was lying there gasping, trying to get his knocked-out breath back, when a figure materialized above him, silhouetted against the stars, and touched the muzzle of a rifle to his forehead. "I rather hope you're Mr. Shaw," a polite voice said.
"Yes, I'm Shaw," he managed to rasp.
"I'm pleased." The gun was pulled back. "Let me help you up, sir." "Lieutenant Macklin?"
"No, sir. Sergeant Bentley."
Bentley was dressed in a military black and gray camouflaged night smock with pants that tucked into paratroop-style boots. He wore a dark beret over his head, and his hands and feet were the color of ink. He carried a netted steel helmet in one hand. Another man stepped out of the darkness.
"A problem, Sergeant. Mr. Shaw had a bit of a tumble."
"You Macklin?" asked Shaw, getting his breath back. A set of teeth gleamed brightly. "Can't you tell? Under that minstrel makeup, you all look alike to me. Sorry about that. Have you accounted for your men?" "All 14 of us sound and fit, which is quite something for a jump in the dark. I'll need you to look for a portal into the hill, some sign of excavation or depression in the earth. Begin at the base of the hill and work toward the summit on the north side." Macklin turned to Bentley. "Sergeant, gather the men and have them form a search line 10 feet apart."
"Yes, sir."
Bentley took 4 steps and was swallowed up in the thicket.
I was wondering, Macklin said idly.
What?
Asked Shaw.
The Americans. How will they react when they find an armed force of Royal Marine paratroopers entrenched in upstate New York?
Hard to say. The Americans have a good sense of humor.
They won't be laughing if we have to shoot a few of them.
When was the last time? Shaw muttered in thought.
You mean since British men-at-arms invaded the United States?
Something like that.
I believe it was in 1814 when Sir Edward Parkenham attacked New Orleans.
We lost that one.
The Yanks were angry because we burned Washington.
Suddenly, they both tensed. They heard the roaring protest of a car engine as it was shifted into a lower gear. Then a pair of headlights turned off the nearby road onto the abandoned rail spur. Shaw and Macklin automatically dropped to a crouch and peered through the grass that grew on the lip of the ravine. They watched the car bump over the uneven ground and come to a stop where the track bed disappeared under the slope of the hill. The engine went quiet, and the man got out and walked in front of the headlights. Shaw wondered what he would do when he met up with Pitt again. Should he kill the man? A hushed command to Macklin, even a hand signal, and Pitt would go down under a dozen knife thrusts from men who were trained in the art of silent murder. Pitt stood for a long moment, staring up the hill as if challenging it. He picked up a rock and threw it into the darkness of the slope. Then he turned and climbed back behind the steering wheel. The engine came to life and the car made a U-turn. Only when the taillights became dim red specks did Shaw and Macklin stand up.
I thought for a moment that you were going to order me to snuff the beggar, said Macklin.
The thought crossed my mind, replied Shaw. No sense in prodding a hornet's nest. Things should get warm enough come daylight. Who do you suppose he was?
That, said Shaw slowly, was the enemy.